I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
Back, second half of the show is live. We've been talking a lot about the Vols, so why not continue that conversation? We just had a prediction of 11-1 from a fan named Slim from Knoxville. Let's bring in Adam Sparks now, covers the Vols for the New Sentinel. We saw Adam a couple weeks ago in Atlanta. Adam, great to have you with us. So practice is about to commence. Josh Heupel meeting the media. Everything is ready to go. Give us the lay of the land, and what are you sensing as somebody who covers the team on a daily basis?
Yeah, well, obviously there's optimism around. I heard Slim on his call there. He lives in West Knoxville. I also live in West Knoxville, so I'm afraid if I say anything bad, make it a knock on the door in a minute. There's certainly a different sense this year than last year, just because there's a proven track record with what Josh Heupel did on offense. I think there's almost this assumption that they're going to be really, really good on offense. And they've still got holes that they have to plug there, just like any year. They don't know who their left tackle is, and that's pretty important when you're protecting Hendon Hooker's blind side. They've got some issues, some depth issues at running back. They've already lost one guy to Lanith Whitehead to a season-ending injury. They've got two starting wide receivers they've got to figure out. But there's just this assumption that they will plug holes like they did last year and they'll be a top 10 offense. And I'd say that's probably pretty reasonable for what Josh Heupel did last year. Most of the problems are going to be on defense. And most of what I'm looking at is a secondary that has a lot of options, and they don't know what the right pieces in the puzzle are. I count about 12 guys in their secondary that could have a chance to start. And not only do they not know who the starters are going to be, they don't know who's playing corner, who's playing safety, if guys are going to swap positions, if they're going to go, if a nickel's going to be starting at safety and vice versa. And that's why you have preseason practice. But I think it points to probably the first half of the season where they're going to have some question marks and they're going to have sort of experiments on that side of the ball.
Adam, let's get to the defense later. We don't want to ruin the party here, but in terms of explosiveness and the left tackle is fairly important. But other than that minor issue, how wild is this offense going to be to watch?
Well, I mean, they have a lot of their pieces back from last year. Here's the thing is last year, I think the sense was the coaching on offense, the coaching was actually better than the playing. And that sounds sort of odd because they did have a lot of good players last year, but they were leftover pieces from Jeremy Pruitt that had underperformed, and they overperformed with Josh Heupel. But if you look at Tennessee's offense, they had the best scoring margin in the country in the first quarter. They had one of the best scoring margins of anybody in the country in the third quarter. That tells you coaches, specifically Josh Heupel, setting up a script to be better than what he's facing. Once you got into the second quarter and the fourth quarter, that would drop off and Tennessee would fall behind. And because that's where players are having to make more plays because the adjustments have been made. So if you string that out, you say they've got the system to put up a lot of points again, but they've got to upgrade some of the talent. And that's where they have to plug in a couple new wide receivers. I think Jalin Hyatt is going to be really, really good. He's a guy that underperformed last year. I think they've got some other pieces they'll plug in. They actually have a really good freshman that you're going to eventually hear about, Squirrel White. It's a great nickname. He'll be one of the fastest players in the SEC. Whether or not they'll figure out how to use him this year, we'll see. But they've recruited well on offense, and that's where they're going to win. If they're going to win these games, it's going to be, scoring 45. It's not going to be doing much on the other side of the ball.
And, Adam, you can only show the schedule so many times and pick your poison. But it just seems like last year all over again with Pittsburgh being a very pivotal game. And that game went the other way. Pittsburgh is certainly not the same team as they were last year. Tennessee would, on paper, be a better team. And then Florida at home. I mean, no matter what you think, and then at LSU, it is a really good opening schedule. Agree?
Yeah, I mean, so I think it's kind of silly to say Tennessee could go 10-2 at this point, obviously. But, a big but, if they were to go win at Pittsburgh, and they'll be a mild favorite at that game, if they were to finally in the hex against Florida, and Florida is down, and they do get Florida at Neyland, and if they were then, I think the biggest one, go and win at LSU, at Death Valley, if you do those three things, then you're favored in the rest of the games in the season, aside from Alabama, Georgia. So then 10-2 actually would be realistic. Now, I think 8-4 is more reasonable. I think you should be happy if you win two out of the three games that I just named. I think you have to be happy if you don't get tripped up by South Carolina or Kentucky at home. You take your lumps against Georgia and Alabama, and you're a game better than you were last year, and you go to, you know, the Outback Bowl or something. I will say last year, Tennessee was 7-5 in the regular season. They were a whole lot closer to 9-3 than they were 6-6. So if you replicate that again, you get a little better on defense, then, you know, 8 wins is maybe more of the floor.
So that's the optimism, and I hate to play this game, but we will. What could go wrong for Tennessee?
I mean, the defense doesn't get any better. Maybe last year was the best that they're going to be on defense, which, you know, they had the worst passing defense in the conference last year. And if you have a definite weakness in that way, in a conference that's loaded with quarterbacks and a lot of teams that like to throw the ball, you could get exploited pretty quickly. And if you lose at Pitt, again, I think that's a toss-up game. You lose at Pitt, then you suddenly feel shaky against Florida because you know the history there. Winning at LSU is tough. And, you know, if you're 2-3, then you know, the ship starts sinking at midseason because you know what's coming up on the schedule. And there are just a number of things that could go wrong, as well as there are a number of things that could go right. And, by the way, you've got to have Hendon Hooker upright. I know I mentioned left tackle, and that's just one position, but they've got to protect him. If he's not healthy, then, you know, 8-4 becomes 6-6 pretty easily. And one thing they want to change in the offense this year is they want to run him quite a bit. And they've got depth issues possibly at running back, and if you're exposing Hendon Hooker to a lot of hits, you know, you could have a problem, and schedule looks a whole lot different if you don't have Hendon Hooker out there.
And Adam, you've covered the league for a while, and a lot of this often depends on what those tweener teams do. And you know, we don't know Missouri very well right now. South Carolina, you know, depends on whether you talk to their fans or talk to experts. So therein lies some of the issues. In Kentucky, I know Tennessee fans just automatically count that as a win because of the recent history, but Will Levis was here yesterday. He seemed pretty confident.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to a few Tennessee fans the other day, and I listed my toss-up games, and there are 5 of them, and I've named 3, plus Kentucky, plus South Carolina, and I got a lot of groans. Of South Carolina, you know, Tennessee was up 28-0 in a blink of an eye against South Carolina last year. But that was a different South Carolina team, and there's a different quarterback at South Carolina. And that game will be in mid-November at South Carolina. I would still pick Tennessee to win that game. But, yeah, I think you do make a lot of assumptions if you say you're going to win every game that you won last year plus win a couple more. And that's making a big assumption of teams that got a lot better. I mean, a lot of Tennessee fans say, well, Florida, if you had played Florida a month later last year, you would have beat them easily. Well, if you'd have played South Carolina a month later last year, that would have been a lot more competitive game. So I think it sort of goes both ways. I think a reasonable Tennessee fan says this is an 8-4 team. If you're worse than that, then you've got some questions. If you're better than that, then that's just gravy, and you can enjoy the Citrus Bowl or wherever you go.
Adam, my final question, I'll just play dumb, act like I've never been to campus and followed Tennessee closely. How did the fans go from 0 to 100 this quickly?
Offense. I mean, every fan base wants to be really, really good at one thing. you can be, you know, pretty good at a number of things. That doesn't move the needle. If you are really good at one thing and you look at the opponent, no matter who it is, and say, we know we're better at you than this, then you can build optimism pretty quick. And Tennessee was better offensively than just about anybody they played. I mean, the Alabama game, they went up and down the field in the first quarter. That was a very close game going to the fourth quarter. They had a lead against Georgia early. I know these are small steps, but you say, I believe my team can score 30 or 40 on anybody. And when you've got that sort of optimism, it can kind of go a long ways.
Adam Sparks, what a great job he does covering the Tennessee Vols. So enjoyed seeing you recently, and thanks for coming on. We'll stay in touch, Adam, and be careful driving around West Knoxville. If you see a guy who has Slim on the back of his car, get out of the way.
I'll keep my head on the swivel. Thanks, Bob.
Okay, thank you very much. We will take a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We are back, and we're taking your phone calls, and Squirrel is up next.
Interesting show today, and it's always great to hear from our friends in West Knoxville.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting part of town. You remember back in our day, West Knoxville was kind of sleazy. If you were on the west end of Kingston Pike, you were...
Yeah, but you have to remember, before you got there, though, where I thought... The rich lived, and it turned out they really weren't. But it just anything was nicer than where I was living.
Well, a lot of that wasn't developed back then. If you also remember back in the early 70s and mid 70s, a lot of that lake area around in there. I mean, it's beautiful now, but I was talking about back in the day. They had a strip club down there and an X-rated drive-in theater. If you remember,
I didn't have to go to West Knoxville for a strip club.
I bet you didn't.
I had one right down the hall in my dorm.
I bet you did. And that's too much information for me.
We're just kidding.
Can we finish a conversation we had Friday, if you don't mind?
Please.
And to bring people up to speed that may not have heard it, you know, I'd at the end of my call, I just casually mentioned that Jim had agreed to have dinner with me, and you asked, could you join? And I said I would ask him, and then right after that, Legend called and implied that Jim and I were gay. And I think that kind of brings us up to where we are now.
I missed that. I mean, I didn't miss the show. I was here, but I've got immunity to that type of conversation.
Oh, no. Well, I'll get to that in a minute.
I took that vaccine and booster some time ago.
Sure you did. What's your go-to dish at Bright Star?
I've always liked the snapper, but here's
when the red, I used to, the red snapper.
Yeah,
the red snapper.
When we used to go there, I didn't go there often. We knew Jimmy Coikas really well, and some friends of ours would always call ahead and. And Jimmy would
Andrea and, table and
yeah and then Andreas, who runs the place now, would always just bring out dishes, so it was always great. I like the snapper. I've got a penchant. I don't need it more than maybe once a year, but I really do like trout almondine.
I've never tried it. I always go with the snapper. You can't go wrong
but,
there.
But snapper, and, I eat that in New Orleans, but snapper would be my go-to at the Bright Star.
Sure. Sure. Well, I've got reservations, but unfortunately, at this time, Tim says he's not. He would prefer you not join us.
Well, okay, I will not go there. But let me do this, okay?
Yeah.
I don't have. Let me know when you're going. And I was with Andreas a couple of weeks ago. We were at an event together, and we went out afterwards. He runs the place now. He owns the place.
Let me
intercede. I don't need to be there, okay? But I want to make sure you're in the Bryant booth, and you will not have to order, and I will take care of everything.
That's what I wanted to hear. And the other bad news is that he's a little upset with you. He was upset by that comment that you knew he would be. And he says he's quit the show again, but that could mean he could call in again.
I am not only going to set it up, I am going to put it on my account there, which I don't have, but I'll make one.
Well, look, it didn't bother me, Legend's comment, because, you know, I always think it's funny when, you know, some dude who spent 16 years in prison eating mangrove and biscuits every day calls somebody else's name of that nature. But speaking of Mr. Las Vegas, he said last week that he's moving to Las Vegas next year.
Yes, that's what he said.
Last year, he said he was moving to Las Vegas this year. So
I hate to state the obvious here to you, but what happens in Vegas?
He could get a
he
job.
He may be living there right now.
Sleazy. Yeah, well, he lives in a camper. It's not that hard to get to Las Vegas. Just hook that son of a gun up, get on I-20 West, and he could be there in about 2 days. And I'll even buy him a tank of gas.
Hey, Squirrel, when is the Bright Star Summit?
I don't want to tell you because I don't want a lot of paparazzi around there. Thanks for taking my call. Aloha.
Squirrel, I can't get you in the Bryant booth if you're – I think there's a Saban booth now too, by the way. I'll tell you the famous old story about the Bright Star. Jimmy Korkus loved this story. Coach Bryant loved the place. He came there one Monday night, early 70s, somewhere. Monday Night Football had just started. And Namath was on TV. The Jets and somebody. I don't remember who they were playing. And Coach Bryant walks in. And he tells Jimmy, he said, I want to watch the game. Bring your TV in. He didn't have a TV. So he sent, I think his brother Nicky, I think this is correct, to his house. And they went and got like a portable TV at his mother's house or his house and dragged the TV back to the Bright Star and set it up so Coach Bryant could sit in his own little private booth and watch Joe Namath on TV. Eugene is next in Kentucky. Hello, Eugene. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon, Paul. Always love the show and
Thank
the
you.
Personalities that make it what it is.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm a longtime Kentucky fan, Paul. And, of course, we've certainly experienced more lows than highs in college football over the years. Right now seems to sort of be a good positive era for Kentucky football. And I took a little bit of exception to the national columnist who came on either yesterday or a couple of days that predicted Kentucky to finish fifth in the SEC East. And while I know Kentucky is no national power or anything in football, right now is a good era for Kentucky football. And whenever, you make predictions like that as a journalist, and put Florida second with the tumultuous season they had last year and then now they have a new coach, it just makes the column, the columnist, and the media outlet lose credibility. And, we see this all the time, with journalists on the national spotlight. We're losing greats in the industry like Dick Schaap, Vern Lundquist, Brent Musburger. And I feel like we're replacing a lot of these people with fanboys. And, if this guy, if he wrote for it, was a beat writer for the Gainesville Sun, or maybe work for the Florida Radio Network, I understand because he's getting paid to be optimistic about his team. But to write for a national columnist and make predictions like that, I just think, you lose credibility that way.
Eugene, there isn't enough time the remainder of the show, which is about an hour and a half, for me to completely opine on the state of sports media today. But I'll do it in another forum at another time. But I agree with you. I didn't feel like he had great knowledge of the subject that he was talking specifically about. Now, I will counter by saying he has every right to offer his opinion on anything that he chooses. But I would trust Buddy Martin or anyone else who covers that program on a daily basis, Pat Dooley, our friend from the Orlando paper, any of these guys that we talk to here on a regular basis. But ultimately, though, your point is correct. I think we no longer live in an era where there is objective reporting, because the culture of college football today and really politics and everything else does not promote that. It promotes you agree with us or we'll slam the door on your finger.
For sure. I completely agree. And as always, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. Now, that never happens here at the SEC Network, so we're all good. Shannon is in Georgia. Hello, Shannon. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Good to talk to you again. Been a long time.
Listen, now, I've been worried about you, Shannon. What happened? Where you been?
Well, our company got acquired.
Oh, okay.
And it was supposed to be a merger, but it was an acquisition.
Got
and
it.
Everybody's roles got redefined, and that's where we are.
Well, I'm glad to hear you back.
You know. Well, I am. Thank you so much. Hey, Paul, first thing, can you do me a favor? The next time AC calls in, can you have him spit that peanut butter or applesauce out of his mouth so we can understand what he's saying?
Yeah.
I just, it's a cluster when he starts speaking. He sounds like he got the mumbles. I was glad to hear the guy that just called in from the paper up there in Knoxville talk about the fact that Tennessee is basing their entire success criteria on the production of their offense. I was watching the Georgia-Tennessee game from last season, and Georgia scored, kicked off to Tennessee. Tennessee drives the ball down the field. They had that fast-paced offense. They failed to convert, and 40 seconds of time had expired off the clock before their defense was back on the field again. And Paul, that's not a recipe for success long-term. I mean, Heupel's running that offense so fast, and his defense is on the field so much, that the only way they're going to win against quality competition is in shootouts. And you can't win in shootouts all the time. I think their defense ranked 99th in the nation last year in total defense. So I know that Roman Harper and Connor O'Gara and all these guys want to come on here and toot the horn at Tennessee. But all I hear them talk about is, well, they got so much speed on offense. They're so fast, and Hendon Hooker's so good. How are they going to stop anybody, Paul?
Well, ultimately, that's a real problem, and he wasn't sugarcoating it. I thought what Sparks offered was a very credible analysis. And you tell me, Shannon, you're a former coach. If you can't figure out your left tackle position and your entire offense depends on your quarterback, what happens next?
Well, you know, you're putting that guy in a precarious situation. And, you know, you go back and you look at the games they won last season. I mean, you know, they're 45-42s and 45-48s and, you know, shootouts with Pitt and those guys. And then your question with the left tackle position. You know, I think people are getting out over their skis real far when it comes to talking about Tennessee football. I would really lend a lot of credence to guys talking about how well Kentucky's going to do this season and the fact that they're probably the threat to unseat Georgia in the East. I just don't think Tennessee is or will be under Heupel in that offensive scheme.
Well, it's always the danger, and they're not the only school. I can give you three or four, and you know who they are, who are having similar conversations right now. And that's really the problem with the SEC, is it once you get past the top, it becomes cannibalistic. And I'll try to avoid all the usual cliches, but you can't afford injury or a bad game, or you're done.
And the other thing is, Paul, if you look across our conference, the teams that are in the leadership positions, the teams that are in the captain seats, are those guys that play tremendous defense. Saban's a defensive-minded coach.
Sure.
Kirby's a defensive-minded coach. I mean, Ole Miss, I mean, it's a great, you know, get out your popcorn to watch their offense function, and they'll score 38 points a game. But they're also going to, you know, give up 40, you know. And regardless of how you cut it, that's a loss at the end of the day.
Well said, and great to have you back here on the show. Let's take a break. We have another guest in the final hour. We'll talk about the state of Kentucky, both the tragedy that has been occurring, as well as some positive news from the football program right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Don is up next in Tennessee. Hello, Don. Good afternoon.
How you doing, Paul? You doing okay today, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Well, I'm a UT fan, of course. My son graduated from UT. And you asked a question just a little while back about why did UT fans go from 0 to 100 so quick? And, Paul, last season, there was no way we should have won 7 games. You know that. Everybody knows that. There's no way we should have beat Kentucky. I mean, you had 35 players lost to the transfer portal. And there were great players that we lost. We didn't lose the bench warmers. We lost.
No, big-time players.
And they counted on bringing in all these transfers. You bring in a backup quarterback from West Virginia, and now he's one of the top quarterbacks in the nation. You know, and it took them a while to figure out who the quarterback was on UT. And there's no way we should have. I honestly thought, optimistically, we would win 5 last year. 4 probably. I mean, you know, there's no way we could do anything. And we won 7. But honestly, we lost 2 other games with the last play of the game. And it was, bad calls by the refs. The Ole Miss game and the Purdue game. You know. So we're very excited this year. We got a real coach. We got a real coaching staff. We got a quarterback coach, Paul. Remember Butch? He didn't. We didn't have a quarterback coach. And did we have a strength and conditioning coach? We had a student that was filling in for that. So they seem to have a lot of confidence in what happened this summer. And I think a lot of needs were addressed.
I think
if we were just halfway competitive.
Yeah, Don, I think you laid it out well.
Halfway competitive on the defense.
But I think Tennessee's success will be affected as much by other schools as them. And
absolutely.
And I mean, if the SEC is a tick down, I think that favors Tennessee immensely. And what I mean by that is South Carolina. I think that's another one of those keys. South Carolina, Kentucky, those are critical games that teams look really good. They have great quarterbacks, but who you're flipping a coin. Hey, thank you very, very much. Good to hear from you. Shane is up next. Hey, Shane.
Hey, Paul. You got every fan base, Paul, has you have the reasonable and rational fans, and then you have the delusional fans. I think Eugene from Kentucky is the perfect example of a reasonable and rational fan. I think his analysis, his assessment of Kentucky football is spot on. I think they have a great coach, and Mark Stoops is a well-coached football team. They've done a really good job of developing their football players up there. And now Kentucky is a legitimate, you know, I'm not going to say they're an elite football team, but they're solid. And then you got old Slim Pickens up there in God's country talking about 11-1. Listen, brother, I don't know you, but anytime you make a crazy, outlandish statement like that, Slim, you got to expect a little bit of pushback, brother. All right? Your ceiling, I think, in my opinion, I think a sports writer from Tennessee, he really stole my thunder. I think Tennessee's ceiling is 9-3, but you got to have a lot of stuff to go right to be 9-3. You got to beat Florida, South Carolina, Kentucky, LSU. I think you got to win three out of those four, and that's going to be difficult. Now, Alabama's going to stomp you to death, and I think Georgia's going to stomp you to death at home. I don't think you have any shots with Georgia or Alabama. But I think your floor is 6-6 because you have no defense that we know of. So I'm excited for this. You know, camp is getting ready to get started for my dogs tomorrow, Paul, so I'm extremely excited. I'm going to be up in Athens this weekend, and I can't wait in Kentucky. And listen, when Georgia goes to Kentucky, I don't feel good about that game at all. I think that Kentucky, at Kentucky in late November, those fans are going to be riled up, and I don't think it's going to be an easy win for Georgia. And Georgia could, if they're not on their A game, they could get upset, Paul. That's what I see. Thanks, Paul. I appreciate you, buddy.
Yeah, it's always difficult to come off a season like the last, and you're always hunted, but the pressure gets ratcheted up, and Georgia will deal with that this year. Hey, thank you very much for the call. John in Plano, Texas is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Paul, don't change your theme song to incorporate Texas and Oklahoma right now, because it may be a moot point as far as I'm concerned. I'm a UT Austin alumnus, and I was very excited about Texas and Oklahoma being invited to the SEC. But I'm entirely frustrated by the SEC's total lack of urgency in integrating their Texas and Oklahoma into the SEC. They seem to be so scared of a tortious interference lawsuit that they've ceded the novelty and the audaciousness of their plans to the Big Ten. They've lost the momentum, and I think the deal might be in jeopardy of Texas and Oklahoma coming. And, I mean, Texas is the number one college football revenue-producing team or college. They may be tied with Texas A&M, according to the at least one of the services. And when you have, in a money game, I agree with you, all this conference expansion is based on money and media rights, then you do everything. If you're a conference, you do everything possible to get those teams on board and to integrate them as quickly as possible. You do whatever it takes, whether it's paying off the Big 12.
Here's the problem, okay? Now, you talk about being involved in a tortious interference case. I've been involved, and they're serious matters, especially when the federal government, and especially this DOJ, is looking to come after you. So be careful. And you know, with antitrust allegations flying all over the place, you can't blame the SEC for moving slowly. If this were just the University of Texas, I think it would have already been done. And you know why? They would have paid the money. I mean, what do they care? What does the University of Texas care about $80 million? But you know who else is involved in this move? And Oklahoma doesn't have that kind of money to pay.
Well, you know, then maybe the SEC has to, you know, have a meeting. Maybe they
Don't you think that I think it's going to happen sooner than 25? I do, and I think the year that I hear keep being tar. I frankly thought it could have happened by next year. A year ago today, we were all together, just exuberant and exhilarated, because I thought it could happen not perhaps this year, but certainly by 23. But everything fell apart. The CFP fell apart. The sniveling, petulant, insecure commissioner of the Big 12 made things very difficult. He went absolutely crazy. Then the league did push him out, as you well know. And the new guy is much more pragmatic, and is a businessman. And with four schools coming into the Big 12, I would think that he could find some common ground. And there's a price for everything. And I'm hoping you're right, because it is a slow train to wherever you want to go. And I think we're all sick of speculating. Thank you for the call. Back with much more of your phone calls, more guests right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, we're back, and Frank is up next in Georgia. Hey, Frank, good afternoon to you.
Hey, Mr. Paul, how are you?
We're doing great, thank you.
First of all, this merely is just a respect call to you and your program. As a football player, I just wanted to call and say thank you for everything that you do, your program does on a daily basis, not just promoting SEC football, but all football.
Thank you.
Okay. Number two, the respect goes out to Mr. David, who called out earlier this week, the retired veteran from Georgia. I think he was a master sergeant. I've never been in the military, but was raised up around a military family, and I just wanted to really give him respect for what he's done and for what he lives for on a daily basis at 3 o'clock coming in to watching you guys, okay?
Thanks for saying that. That was really an important call, and we all appreciated what he said.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And I appreciate what you promote and everything. I just want to give a shout-out to a couple of names. Ronnie Cottrell, who was a recruiting coordinator back in the early 90s for the legendary Bobby Bowden at
FSU.
Sure was. He hit me hard for 3 years out of high school. Carl Franks at University of Florida. When the man came in 93 and started winning everything from Duke. No disrespect to him. Great guy, great talent. Just wanted to say thank you for what you do. And again, a shout out, respect for the program, sir.
Well, thank you, Frank. In fact, you mentioned Ronnie Cottrell, who was not only the FSU recruiting coordinator, but he was also the same position at Alabama. I haven't seen Ronnie in a long time, but one of the best recruiters I've ever met. And everyone talks about this guy being amazing, but he was in a league of his own back then. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's continue with Pop Bob in Arkansas.
Hey, Paul.
Hey,
how
there.
You doing today?
Good afternoon.
Just wanted to come back with a comment from the guy from Plano, Texas. I think we both will be happy when we get there, and Texas is known for complaining a lot.
if you got, let me ask you a question. If you got fans from Oklahoma, A&M, or Arkansas together, which group do you think would have the most complaints about Texas?
I think it'd be a real close tie on all three of them.
I'm going with A&M.
Oh, really?
Okay. I think they find the Longhorns to be I think they're irritated more by them than anyone else, only maybe because they live in the same state. But it would be a battle royale.
Well, I just hated that he was complaining that and trying to blame it on the SEC that we're not there, and we just need to take care of our own business.
Yeah, I mean,
happy.
Yeah, you have to remember when you're dealing with,
when we get there.
I mean, if you're sitting there as the commissioner of the SEC, you have great legal counsel, and you follow what your counselors tell you to do. And I mean, you could see Greg Sankey a year ago at this time, how he was tiptoeing around those questions, and he's gotten far more expansive now. But you cannot be reckless. The person who was reckless was the Big 12 commissioner, making specious and spurious allegations without an iota or a scintilla of evidence. I mean, the guy made a blithering fool out of himself with all the allegations that were never going to ever be corroborated. So, Sankey knows what he's doing. This is not his first trip down the lane here. He's been involved in other expansion before, including Texas A&M and Missouri. He's watched all of this unfold. I think we're going to talk to the author tomorrow, but in an article today about how this is done, it made a point about why you don't talk to anyone. And in 2010, A&M was headed to the SEC, and it became public because Texas was looking to go to the Pac-12. And Rick Perry, the former governor of Texas, shut it down. Because you never want the politicians involved in anything. Now, Perry later was very supportive of the move as the governor. But there are more important things to deal with, such as politics. And in a state like that, where Austin is the most powerful entity, he knew what he had to do. We'll take a break. Another hour to go. We appreciate you being here, and be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.